Thanks, everyone. I wanted to start out by asking how many of you in this room work at a health department that uses a student type of response team or students on a regular basis? And how many of you would like to work in a health department that used students on a regular basis? Okay, I got two hands. Okay. So one of the caveats that I want to tell you, there are different models of student response teams out there. I know a lot of people look at Minnesota and Team Diarrhea and what they've done. This came out of the university and went towards the health department rather than the other way around, so it may look a little different than some of these. And it's just one more model to consider when you're looking at a way to maybe establish one of these teams. So SAFER, again, stands for the Student Aid for Field Epidemiology Response. It took me a long time to come up with that acronym. And we really decided to model it on service learning. So service learning is kind of a new thing within academia, and all of the other, you know, health promotion, these other areas are, you know, talking about their great service learning. And we said, wait a minute, we do service learning, but we just do it with data collection and analysis, which makes it even better. So SAFER is essentially a group of enthusiastic graduate students who are interested in working with you all at the health departments and learning more about outbreak investigations and really what happens once they get a job in the real world. And the students take part in emerging and continuing disease investigations along with, in our state, both state and local health departments. So I don't think I need to sell you on the idea of why it's important for students to study outbreaks. All of you at one point came into a health department relatively new and probably got thrown into the fire and said, hey, this just happened, we need you to do these things. And you probably would have thought, it would have been great if I'd learned this in grad school. So it's really great public health training. It allows them to gain some real world experience outside of the classroom. It provides assistance to health departments at the same time. There's something really big going on outside. And it allows them to collaborate with local health departments, which also then gives them opportunities to network for future internships, to make future career contacts. They have a lot of fun. For those of you who've done outbreak investigations, as much as we don't want people to get sick, we all secretly love it when people get sick because it's kind of fun. So that's one of the things. And then it also gives them opportunities to make money eventually by getting a job to pay off their student loans. So what are the ways that we went about establishing our team? So first this was 10 years ago. I did this as actually my master's thesis, my MPH project, and then have just kind of gone forward with it since then. So I conducted a needs assessment with state and local health departments. I then summarized the interview findings and developed the program from there. And then the team was piloted with 15 graduate students in the spring of 2005, so this has been going on for about 10 years. And then we established an outbreak response course that was then tied to this team. And that's where ours may be a little different from some of the others. So for the needs assessment, I did a structured interview, a lot of the kind of qualitative stuff that we talked about in the last presentation, with different health departments. So I talked to local epidemiologists, people at the state epi, and talked about information about what kind of skills they would want students to have, kind of when they walked in the door, what things you would want them to know about outbreak investigations, how the students would participate, what were some of the legal and safety issues, and then a lot of the logistic issues, and then funding possibilities. So some of the summaries of the findings is we looked at what are some of the potential activities that students could do, what were the training needs. So it was obviously important for students to be well trained before they took part in any response, and what would that training look like, how would we develop that? What are some of the topics they should be trained on? Should it be disease-specific? Should it be method-specific? What should we look at? And then what were some of the prerequisite requirements? Do we want students that are first-year students, second-year students? Should they, you know, where are they in the continuum of their education? And then some of the concerns that we needed to address before we could actually formally establish a program. So confidentiality and HIPAA type requirements are something that obviously everybody at the health department, that was kind of their first, you know, wait, we have to make sure that all of this is maintained. So we needed to make sure the students were trained on those kinds of things, being prepared for the field, everything from cultural competency to making sure they had their current vaccinations. Who were the personnel within the health department that would do some of the training? And then what were some of the funding issues? So travel and lodging costs is necessary, and costs associated with training. So at the time, there were a few programs that were around at the time, 10 years ago, but most of them were very centralized within their area. So I talked to people who had done some of these other programs, and I said, well, how did you deal with travel? And they said, well, we're like 2 blocks from our health department, so it's not that big of a deal. In Arizona, we could fit, you know, a good chunk of the eastern seaboard in our state. So it was not possible for us to not take travel into account. In addition, Tucson, which is where the university is located, is about 150 miles and 2-hour drive from our capital, which is where our state health department is, and also where Maricopa County Health Department, which is the largest county in our state and actually the third largest jurisdiction in the country and the most population, which was going to make sense that we were going to have the most interaction with them. So we needed to be able to work those things out. In addition, we wanted to know, okay, this is what the university is going to provide. We will have students and we'll have a class and we can provide, you know, we'll cover the cost of running that side of things. But what are the health department responsibilities? And we came up with these together. And the first was just to provide training and orientation at the beginning of each school semester for new team members. So we do this twice. The class runs both fall and spring semesters. So we do trainings twice a year to provide training on confidentiality and maintain updated user agreements. So we have all of the students sign all of the same agreements that any either volunteer or new staff member would sign at any other health department. To provide some instruction on supervision to student volunteers when they arrive. So I'll talk a little bit about our structure, but there are times when students will actually go to the health department to do things. And so it was just, not that it really needed to be put in writing, but some expectation that when they show up, they wouldn't just be put in a cubicle and you know, forgotten about. To maintain an expectation of temporary, so 1 to 3 day commitment from students unless previously determined to work longer, and this is specifically for if they're going out in the field. I mean, these are still students, so we have to be cognizant of their educational needs and issues. And then to facilitate access to secure email network and surveillance system for the teaching assistants, and I'll get into that. So there are 3 training sessions that our students go through. The first one is at the State Health Department. At the State Health Department, they primarily go through kind of, that's more of a disease du jour. So we have the HAI epi and the foodborne epi, and each of the main diseases, they talk about what they do within their group and how doing an HAI outbreak investigation is going to look different than doing a foodborne outbreak investigation. Maricopa County specifically focuses on foodborne outbreak investigations and interviewing skills, because we know that not every one of these students are going to be interested in foodborne, and even some of them are going to want to go do, you know, chronic diseases later. I can't sell them on all infectious diseases. But what I tell students is, ultimately, in the end, it doesn't matter what disease or what condition you work on. You are in public health. You have to learn how to talk to the public. So interviewing skills is a huge thing that we focus on, and Maricopa County has developed a really amazing training where they break off their epis and have the students do an interview in person. My particular favorite is when people like to role play outside of their gender, outside of their age, just to kind of get people to have to think on their feet. And the importance of things like reading a questionnaire before you go in and do a questionnaire with someone, making sure you understand the verbiage of what you're doing, all of these things that a lot of us learned the hard way on the job, we're trying to get them to learn as a student. And then finally, the Pima County Health Department, which is where we're located. And we do work with them mostly. They talk about how to do a mock investigation, and they really like to talk about some of the more bizarre cases that they've worked in their department. So the way the class is set up is the course content. Again, the 2 main things that we cover are outbreak investigation methodology and interviewing techniques. But in addition to that, We also touch on infectious disease transmission, epidemiology surveillance, and just basic epidemiology that you would do at an applied level. So the focus is really more applied epi rather than research that you would do in an academic setting. And then interactive seminars that bring public health professionals to share investigation experiences with students. So I try to get people from the health departments come and talk about some of the things that they do, some of the investigations that they've done, if they've done any studies that have spun off on that, those kinds of things, and just allow them to have more of a one-on-one interaction with specific health department professionals. So we have a surveillance and outbreak laboratory. It's actually an old laboratory that I converted into a call center because we, again, are 2 hours away, and a lot of what we found is that we're doing calls over the phone, and that's largely what you do at a health department, and it just wasn't logistically feasible to try and send the students up to, like, the state health department or Maricopa, who's our biggest collaborator, a few times a week. It would cost too much money, it's too much time. So we've established a call center at the university that has a lot of the same security issues. You know, we have under lock and key, those kinds of things. And that's where students can conduct routine interviews, outbreak interviews, and then if there are studies that come up that the health department want to initiate and collaborate on, we've done those from there. So we've done a statewide campylobacter study, we did a rabies PEP study, and we've also done a lot of enhanced case control. So oftentimes, I think one of the benefits of our program is oftentimes you'll have an outbreak investigation and you can do this much, and then at the end you go, ooh, it would be really awesome if we could just do this additional work or look into this because there was this weird thing that happened or there's this population we didn't expect. And having this team allows the health department to do, you know what, we can do that study and we're going to do that study with your students. So the out-of-the-classroom experiences for the students include training sessions with the health department, some field investigations. We've gone to long-term care facilities and gone, you know, room to room to do questionnaires there. That was an interesting experience for my students. A lot of lessons learned on how to keep people on track with their questionnaire. And I always tell them there's a relationship between age and length of interview, because the older they are, the longer, right? And then preparedness activities and training sessions. So we have things like our college is a multi-college pandemic exercise every fall. We have pod activities with our campus health department, and we've also done them with some of the local health departments, and then community assessments with some of the health departments. And then, again, research opportunities, but more of an applied research setting. So how do I recruit students and who do I recruit? So epidemiology students are actually required to take our course, which is lovely because I don't have to worry about recruiting them. And we feel as a department that it's critical that they learn these skills and they're exposed to this. Even if it's something that they don't foresee themselves doing in the future, we still think it's necessary for them to be exposed to this. For biostat students, and I have biostat students, I just tell them the with data analysis part, and that seems to sell them. They actually really like the idea of being able to work with real data, because oftentimes when you're, you know, in an advanced biostatistics class, you aren't going to be getting, you know, real messy public health type data. You're going to get data from a study that's been cleaned and has been used multiple times, because that's what you need in order to teach someone a specific method. But if you give them health department data and say, now clean it, and that's actually one of the projects that I do with them. I give them health department data, and I say, I want you to clean this, and I want you to get it back to me, and I want you to answer just these very basic questions, because cleaning the data is also very much part of the process. For maternal and child health, we have students, you know, we are interviewing moms. We've got diseases of kids, and how do we deal with there's definitely a dynamic there when you're talking with children or parents. Health behavior, health promotion, I always tell them, you know, we're always trying to, even if you're doing an interview with someone, you're still trying to push a public health message. So at the end of all of the interviews, we have a script, and everything at the end is, you know, make sure you wash your hands, make sure you don't go to work if you have diarrhea, all of these promotional things that we're trying to do. Policy, I like to say somebody has to deal with the politicians, and EPIs typically don't want to. And then environmental health services is kind of looking at the bigger picture and seeing how environmental sources of contamination may play a role. So the commitments that the students have to sign up for is it's a two-hour class every week. There are 2 8-hour training sessions in Phoenix, which we, the department pays. We have a big van, and everybody goes up, and we are there for the whole day, and then we bring everybody back at the state and county health department. And then they have to sign up for 2 2-hour sessions in the surveillance lab each month. And that's, we allow them to sign up generally on their schedules. It's really on when the TAs are available to be in the, or myself are available to be in the lab. But we try to make it flexible. And I didn't used to do that. I used to just have it be when we had an outbreak, I would, you know, call people. I would sound the alarm. And, but we found that having a schedule was really important, because if the health department called me a Tuesday, or, you know, well, it's usually Friday at 4 o'clock to say that they have an outbreak, right? Then I could look at the schedule and say, I have a student come, you know, I have one student coming in Saturday, I have 2 students coming in Monday, and I know exactly who will be there and how much time they can commit to the problem. The other thing I want to kind of explain is that it has been an incremental process. So we started with essentially myself and then the students who were part of the class. And over time, as our relationship has grown with the health departments, some of the things that they've wanted us to do or take on have grown, and so we've adjusted over time with that as well. So as we've addressed some of their additional needs, we've also had additional funding. And then opportunities to conduct applied public health research and enhance studies following outbreaks is something that we've also been doing more of in more recent times. So the structure of the team originally, again, was myself and the students who were enrolled in the course. And I have to say, there are a lot of courses or a lot of student response teams out there that are all student-based, and they're wonderful in a lot of ways, but the one problem with that is when you have a student-led team, it's really based on how engaged that particular student leader is that semester. And so sometimes you may have a really great response from students, and other years it kind of drops off. And so our recommendation is that there is some sort of continuity on the university side as well as on the public health side. It doesn't have to be a full-time FTE at all, but it definitely has to be someone who has consistency over the years. Throughout that time, as our responsibilities and other activities have grown, I've added 2 teaching assistants, and they really make it possible for the course to be what it is now. They assist with the course management, they supervise the students in the lab while making calls when I'm not able to be there, because we have up to, if we have 20, you know, students in the class and they're doing 2 hours a month, you know, that's 80 hours. So I can't possibly be there the full 80 hours and continue to do my other job. So it's something that makes it possible. And then they also are responsible for uploading case data into the state's electronic surveillance system, and they interact with the health departments quite a bit. And then we also just recently, as we've added additional responsibilities, I've hired a student worker who has to be bilingual. This is Arizona, after all. And conducts interviews, and they are specifically hired to do interviews on nights and on weekends. Because we've seen that as we have the ability to, you know, if you only make calls from 9 to 4 or 9 to 5, you're only going to get the people who are home from 9 to 5. So this person generally will work from about 4 to 8. In the evenings, 1 weekday or 2 weekdays, and then a couple hours on either a Saturday or Sunday. And then generally we hire 2 to 3 summer workers to do about 10 hours each when we don't have students available. So these are some of the potential activities for students. And we've done a lot of these things. I've kind of talked about them. Okay. And so for the investigations, the nice thing is that we've gotten to the point now that from the time we get notified from the health department, it's usually about 24 hours or less till we've able to have a full set of students respond to those things. So it's gotten to the point where it's very routine, I guess. And then these are some of the different outbreaks, lots of norovirus, lots of weddings. I always tell people to be careful of their caterer. But we've done pertussis and measles and flu and pretty much anything you can think of. The other thing that we've done is back in 2007, I was working with the university, and I got approached by the health department to figure out a way that we could do some more advanced surveillance at Super Bowl that was coming in 2008. So I developed some kind of strategies and other things, and a surveillance strategy and interview questionnaires and other things that we could use at the Super Bowl. And so we used it that first time with students, and then since then we've done it multiple times. There was a talk yesterday about all of the things that Maricopa County did around the last Super Bowl, and they did a ton of additional surveillance, and so we were one piece of that surveillance as part of this. And it turns out that it's really not that difficult to recruit students to go to Super Bowl. So that's another thing. As much as the staff would love to go, they're all busy doing, you know, the 100 other extra, you know, tasks they've been given. So it's pretty easy to get students to do this. And then the other thing, and we'll go into a little bit more detail in the next one, is Campylobacter and Salmonella interviews. So this is some of the more recent things that we've added. So one of the things I've noticed is we would do things like train, okay, you're going to get to do these interviews, and then wait, and nothing would happen, and, you know, then you kind of feel bad because you're hoping the people get sick, and that's not appropriate. So one of the things we looked at is starting to do the routine investigation. So we do the routine campy and majority of Salmonella interviews for Maricopa County. And then over, and it should be actually 21 semesters, we've had 176 students do about 1,500 hours, and that doesn't include the paid positions. These are just the volunteer. Some of the challenges are listed, but student schedules are one. You've got to take time to develop trust. We've been doing this for 10 years, and it's just one of those things. Once you know people, it helps. Establishing protocols, and then funding. And then my last one is lessons learned. So if you can employ people over the summer, that really helps. Continue to expand and modify the program, and then hire amazing TAs, because that's really helpful. So we'll save the questions for after Kristen, too, goes. So, thanks.